Welcome. Turn to Acts chapter 2. Acts chapter 2. I didn't forget that I preached a lesson by this same title. I'm not getting quite that old yet. But we're going to continue or follow up with some things from a little different perspective using kind of the same idea. And that is that there is a church we've always wanted, and that church is found in the New Testament. We see it exemplified in the book of Acts, and especially Acts 2, the church at Jerusalem. Read with me from verse 42. "And they devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and fellowship, to the breaking of bread and the prayers. And awe came upon every soul, and many wonders and signs were being done through the apostles. And all who believed were together and had all things in common. And they were selling their possessions and belongings and distributing the proceeds to all as any had need. And day by day, attending the temple together and breaking bread in their homes, they received their food with glad and generous hearts, praising God and having favor with all the people. And the Lord added to their number day by day those who were being saved." Turn to chapter 4. Turning to verse 32. "Now the full number of those who believed were of one heart and one soul, and no one said that any of the things that had belonged to him was his own, but they had everything in common. And with great power the apostles were giving their testimony to the resurrection of the Lord Jesus, and great grace was upon them all. There was not a needy person among them, for as many as were owners of lands or houses sold them and brought the proceeds of what was sold, and laid it at the apostles' feet, and it was distributed to each as any had need." This ideal that we see here, this church that's so alive and so loving, came about because of the involvement of the people, of every person who was involved in that church. Every person who had been baptized and was added to that church and became a participant and had fellowship with the others in that church, got involved. And that's what I want to talk to you about this morning. Because when we are involved, when a large percentage of people in the church are involved in the work, then the church will grow. And we see that. It happens here. Again, look at Acts chapter 2, verse 47. It doesn't end this way by accident. He says, "The Lord added to their number day by day those who are being saved." There was an adding to their number in chapter 4, verse 4. "But many of those who had heard the word believed, and the number of men came to be about 5,000. You see growth continuing. In chapter 6, at verse 7, "And the word of God continued to increase, and the number of the disciples multiplied greatly in Jerusalem, and a great many of the priests became obedient to the faith." And it goes on like that. In fact, you can build... you can structure your study of Acts around statements that the church grew, that it increased, multiplied. Words like that were used to describe this church. And I believe we all want that. I believe all of us want this church to grow. It has grown, excuse me, in the past, and it continues to grow. But we have to be involved. If you're going to be part of this, if you're going to contribute to that growth, you have to be involved. There's no other alternative. Involved is a very simple word. I think we all know what it means, although there's a lot of applications of it too. Sometimes when we see a boy and girl who are an item, we say, well, they're involved with each other. That means that they're wrapped up in each other to some degree. When we're involved with each other, we are wrapped up with each other in some degree. If a situation or activity involves someone, he's taking part in it. That's what it is. It's partnership. It's a participating. It is a communion. Turn over to 1 Corinthians chapter 10. We do this, we just did it a few minutes ago. We just did what Paul describes here. And look how he describes it in verse 16. "The cup of blessing that we bless, is it not a participation in the blood of Christ? The bread that we break, is it not a participation in the body of Christ? Because there is one bread, we who are many are one body, for we all partake of the one bread." We are participating. Now, it's different in a way when we're all doing something together. We're not actively engaging in some project, and so we're all gathered together. We're doing something at the same time. There's a work party here yesterday, and a lot of men showed up, and we're all doing something. There were people doing things all around. They were participating. They were doing some work together in that. We're doing this as we take the bread and we take the fruit of the vine. We are participating in the crucifixion of Christ, and we're doing that together. We're involved in it. Deeply involved in that. In Romans chapter 12, there's some practical advice that Paul gives, practical commands, really, that he gives us for people who are involved. He says, love one another with brotherly affection. Verse 10, Romans 12, 10. Love one another with brotherly affection. Outdo one another in showing honor. I think that's one of our memory verses for preschool, if I'm not mistaken. And it's a great one. Love one another. Why does he say with brotherly affection? Why doesn't he just say love one another? Doesn't that take care of it? He says love one another in a deeper way. Make an effort to love one another and actually be affectionate. I think this proves my point last week when I said that this church was made up of people who loved each other, but also liked each other. You love each other. Yes, you value each other and you do what is best for them, but you also want to be around them. You have affection for them. So you love each other with brotherly affection. There's a family atmosphere that extends to everyone in a church that's growing. And everyone is responsible for extending that idea, that concept of loving each other and with brotherly affection. In verse 13, contribute to the needs of the saints. Contribute to the needs of the saints. So if there's needs, we contribute to those. We participate. We don't let other people do it. We participate. We should act in those cases as if we're the only ones who are doing it. What if I'm the only one who people are relying on? I'm going to do that. I'm going to contribute to the needs of others and seek to show hospitality. That means kindness to strangers, literally. But if we're going to be kind and hospitable to people we don't know, surely we'll do that for people we do know. It just goes without saying. So we are to seek to show that, to demonstrate that hospitality. Verse 15, rejoice with those who rejoice, weep with those who weep. Live in harmony with one another, do not be haughty, but associate with the lowly. Never be wise in your own sight. Then he goes on to say, don't repay evil for evil, and don't take vengeance and all that kind of stuff. We talked about conflict last week and the need to make sure that that is taken care of in every case. Here he's just saying to think about what is going on in the life of other Christians and participate in that. Don't be nosy. Don't stick your nose. Don't be a busybody and stick your nose in their business. But participate in the life of others. That's what it means to be involved. I mean, in every church, there are people who are involved in participating, and then there are people who sit on the sidelines. There are participants and there are spectators. And the Bible doesn't allow any space. I don't know anywhere where it says, and this may be how you grew up or what you saw your parents do, or I don't know, whatever. But there's nothing in the Bible that supports the idea that you can come in, sit on the pew, and then leave, and now that puts you into the kingdom somehow. And it's not like that. That's not what the church is about. The church has a purpose that requires people to be involved. Preachers and elders often talk about the core of the church or the nucleus of the church, words to that effect. The 20-80 rule that is fairly well known in business. 20% of the people do 80% of the work. That's fairly typical in churches as well, although I like to think our core is much larger than that. But that's what we're saying when we look at the church in Jerusalem, and when we look at the church in Antioch, and we see these churches that are involved, the church of Philippi, there's so many examples. This is this little part of the people pie up there, whatever you call it. That's the church within the church. Those are the fired up minority who are doing the work, who are truly participating in the work. They're doing that at a high level. They're doing that with an Acts chapter 2, 42 to 47 attitude. And there are a lot of good things that come from that. These are the people who are attending, obviously. These are people who are teaching classes, who go to group meetings, who go to other classes, go to extra classes, and make it a priority in their life because they are involved. And it's not that they're involved because somebody tells them to be. They want to be. How else do we read this in verse 10 again in Romans 12? Love one another with brotherly affection. Outdo one another in showing honor. I want to show honor to you and try to outdo you, try to exceed your showing honor to me. I want to go beyond that. You need to almost like leapfrog each other in showing honor. Those who are involved, there's some good things that come out of that. There's some positive outcomes. They're aware of the needs of others in the church. How can you just kind of be here on a casual basis, be on the outskirts and know what's going on? I don't see how that's possible. It's not. In Galatians chapter 6, brothers, verse 1, if anyone caught in any transgressions, you who are spiritual should restore him in a spirit of gentleness. Keep watch on yourself lest you too be tempted. How do you know what's going on? How can you possibly carry out this command if you don't know what's going on with the members here? And how do you find out? What do you do? You've got to be involved in participating. You've got to have fellowship. That's what the word fellowship means. It means participation, joint participation. Verse 2, bear one another's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ. I can't bear your burdens. There's two points here, by the way. And one of those is, I can't bear your burdens if I don't know what they are. And we need not to be so proud that we don't share with our brothers and sisters our burdens. If there's something going on in our life that we need help with, if we're just too proud to not tell people that, because you're, for whatever reason, I don't know, to maintain some kind of semblance of invulnerability or something. Tell people when you're struggling with something. Share that so that we can help you bear those. Obviously, if you're willing to tell it, it suggests that you want to deal with it, whatever it is. Whether it's a problem, a trial, or some sin you're struggling with. In verse 10, he says, so then, as we have opportunity, let us do good to everyone, and especially to those who are the household of faith. Do good means to help them, and we need to be aware of their needs. There's also the people who are involved are first responders. When there is a problem, they're the ones who come onto the scene and share with others that which they have that God tells us to share. So they're the ones, 1 John 3:16-18, we've read that a lot, and he said, don't just be one who is willing to die for your brothers. That's great. I'm going to die for you. Although it's unlikely that I'm going to have that opportunity, but still, I'll do it. But if you have this world's goods, if I have this world's goods and I hold back when I know you have a need, John asked a rhetorical question. How does the love of God abide in me? But how do I know? I've got to be involved with you. I've got to be involved to know and to help. And they're the Bereans of the church. Remember them? Turn to Acts chapter 17. Might be a while since we looked at this. Just Acts chapter 17. The people in Thessalonica in that chapter gave Paul a hard time. Chased him out of town. Eventually there's a church established there though. But then it goes down to Berea and it says, in verse 11, now these Jews were more noble than those in Thessalonica. They received the word with eagerness, examining the scriptures daily to see if these things were so. I think as we look at that passage and look back at the Jerusalem church in Acts chapter 2, we see the same kind of attitude. They received with eagerness. They wanted to hear it. I think of Cornelius in Acts chapter 10 when Peter was going to go teach him and he knew he was coming over. They had an appointment. And not only was he eager to hear him, he invited his friends to come in here. He invited the neighborhood. Come in here. There's something new here I want you to hear. And he did that. He wanted to be involved and get other people involved. These people, these Bereans, I believe when you receive something with eagerness, it is God's word that is then made to be applied. It's heard to be applied to your real world situations. And I think that's what these people do. I also think that they tend to be the servants. We're saying about that. Obviously, A servant is somebody who's involved. And I think, obviously, we are told to be servants. You just sang that about that a minute ago. Make me a servant. Well, if I made me a servant, how can I be a servant if I'm not involved with your life? If I'm not participating with you? I can't be what I'm supposed to be. And they're also the most gracious, the most hospitable, the least critical. I think when you're involved with other people, I made this point last week. I used that analogy of driving. We're driving around, and you know, when we know the person in front of us is somebody we really know well, we're going to be a lot softer on them than maybe somebody else who makes mistakes in front of us. That's just kind of human nature. Involvement helps keep us friendly and loving. It's easy to throw stones from afar, and they tend to be the less critical of those. They're happy people I remember in my life, and when I was growing up in church, there were a lot of people that were grumpy and gripey and complaining, and a lot of people like that. I don't remember them as well as I remember. I remember that, and they're kind of a blur. I remember the really joyful people, the people that act like, seem to be happy that they were Christians, and they were friendly to me, a kid. Actually paid attention to me. I remember those people. I remember them by name. The Psalm 122:1 says, I was glad when they said to me, let us go to the house of the Lord. I remember those people coming in and being glad they were there, not just being there. Strong churches have a majority of members who are wrapped up in the work. They're interested, they're engaged, pick your word. They're involved in what's going on. People outside this church, the Folsom Church, believe we're a strong church. I've heard that so many times. I haven't always passed it along to you, but I've heard that so many times. And the only way we can be what we're being told we are is to be involved and get more involved. Get more involved. We are a church that people view as full of life, not a dead church, but full of life. That's because they see us, at least from afar, as involved and participating in each other's life in the right way. I told you last week, one person prays for us every day. What is praying for us? That we'll stay strong. That makes an impression on me. Strong churches deal with things that make churches vulnerable to the darts of Satan. They deal with those things. They deal with them right away. Things like moral failures and lack of knowledge and conflicts. They do everything it can to avoid those kinds of arrows that come our way. And if we're going to do that, we need to examine ourselves and make sure those things aren't giving us problems or causing us issues that will impede our growth. A church becomes weak when members become spectators. Do we have a larger percentage of spectators than we did when this church first started some 40 years ago? You remember when that, very few of you remember when this church started. There are a few. 40 years ago, 43 years ago, if I got my numbers right, my math right, 43 years ago this church started. And I'm thinking of the churches that were addressed in Revelation chapter 2 and 3. Those churches are about that old, probably. And there were some things said about those. You remember Revelation chapter 3? You have a reputation that you're alive, but you're dead, said. 40 years after that, approximately after that church started. You have a reputation that you're alive, but you're dead. You remember Laodicea chapter 3:17? You are neither hot nor cold, you're lukewarm. Churches change over time. In these churches that were probably strong churches, Laodicea thought it was a rich church, thought that they were doing really well, apparently. So did Sardis, or at least other people did. And Jesus has to come in among them and say, your self-impression is incorrect. And it's dangerously incorrect. I hope that's not us, but I'm telling you that we have to remember that we have to be involved. He's looking at people in the church. He's not looking at this as a conglomeration that has kind of a blob that has this good reputation. He's looking at each one of us, and we have to answer to him for how we are involved or not in the work of this group. I'm going to give you, forgive me for a little history here, and if I've talked about this before, I don't know if I have or not on this part, but anyway. 23 and a half years ago, I walked in a little building over on Reading Street and preached my first sermon as the regular preacher here. That was before some of you were born. Yeah, yes, I do feel, I'm feeling older. I'm getting older. Christy and I knew immediately that there was something special about this group. And it was just the attitude. I think I mentioned once I said something and they laughed. People laughed, actually laughed. So these people are in good mood. I wasn't always used to that. They were gracious. I don't think there's one house that we did not enter during that first few years we were there. I can't think of one. In fact, I made a statement once. I've seen your house and you've seen my house. I wasn't making a hospitality statement. I was actually talking about materialism and stuff like that. You know, we've all got nice houses is the point I was making. But I've seen yours, you've seen mine. Very soon after we arrived, we began some classes. And think about this. We had about 110 people at that time. We had a class in Folsom and a class in Pollock Pines and Camino because we had members from both areas. We had the class at Pollock Pines and Camino. We had it on Tuesday night. It was on heaven. Both classes were on heaven, same material. We met at the Larry and Mona's and Hank and Debbie's and the Hoppers, Barbaric's, Dana and Arletta's. We had this class. About 20 people attended that class. Then we had a class on Thursday on heaven, Thursday night in Folsom, meeting at Ann Wolpert's mobile home or Kathleen and Champ's house. About 23, 24 people came to that one. 44, 45 people out of a congregation of 110. And the 110 counts kids. That's kind of remarkable. That's what I walked into. I didn't do anything. I just walked into it and I proposed this class and that's what happened. We had people involved at that level. Every single family, it seems to me, as I look back on it, was involved. There were some people on the periphery, but most everybody was involved. We ate together a lot too. We have to get that in. A teacher was asked their kids during show and tell to bring some symbol of their religion to the class. And a little Jewish boy brought the Torah, a copy of the Torah. And the little Catholic boy brought a little crucifix. A little boy from the Church of Christ came in. And she says, "What's that?" She says, "It's a casserole." We kind of make fun of potlucks now, though. It's like they kind of are the root of jokes. But we ate a lot together, and there's something about that. Why am I telling you all this? Apparently we had time to do that. Christians synchronized their calendars to the church's calendar. The priority was on what the church was doing, not on what they had to do. That's what most people were doing. Did we have more time back then? How many know how many hours are in a week? I don't think that's changed. You don't actually get or lose an hour, you know this, when you turn your clocks. You actually have the same time. No, we didn't have more time. What we had was, there's an attitude, and the people made time for what there was to do, whatever we were doing. They made that a priority. So, if we didn't have more time, if we didn't somehow just, our lives were so much simpler 20 years ago, right? They were so much simpler. Maybe that's true, but you have to ask, why is that true? What is it that's getting in the way of getting involved? And you have to answer this personally. This isn't like just a thing we can all answer as the church. Each person has to answer this. I know we're busy. I know we're busy. Are we busier? People say all the time, my plate is full, I'm crazy busy, I've got too many plates in the air, I'm spinning all these plates, I'm juggling all these stuff. Here, listen to this. There's so many statistics out here about social media right now. In 2013, not too long ago, eight-year-olds on their mobile devices spent 15 minutes a day on their mobile devices. Eight-year-olds. In 2017, it's now 48 minutes a day, and we're talking about eight-year-olds. 48 minutes a day with their little mobile devices doing it. What are they doing with mobile devices in the first place, I guess, my question, but that's another question. Then we have sports, we have entertainment, we have work, we have all of these things that pile up, and now we're busy. And busy, busy, and everybody's got their excuse. Beware, some wise man said. I think it's Socrates, actually. That's who it's attributed to. Beware the barrenness of a busy life. We have to stop there and just kind of take stock of where we are. If our life is so busy that we are feeling lost, then something's got to give. Something's got to change. And it's affecting the church. I'm not up here as an alarmist. This is just a preventative lesson. It's a little bit of a shot, I hope, to prevent us from going down that road, but I do see some evidence of it. Our group meeting attendance has not been good at all. It's been poor. And that tells me that people either don't have time for it because it's packed up with too many other things, or they're not making time for it. When we did those classes, I mean, we got those 20 people. Those are really busy people. I know those people. They're very busy. But they made time for that. They carved that out because they gave that priority. But what can we do about it? Turn over to Ephesians. Turn over to Ephesians chapter 5. Verse 15. Look carefully then how you walk, not as unwise, but as wise, making the best use of the time, because the days are evil. Therefore, do not be foolish, but understand what the will of the Lord is. It goes on to say, don't get drunk with wine. Don't get all enmeshed with the things of the world. Don't get so involved with the things of the world. He says, right after that, he says, be filled with the Spirit. How do you get filled with the Spirit? You get filled with the Spirit by reading the Word and by, he says here, singing. You got to be, well, pretty much in the assembly is what he's talking about. Getting together with Christians and being involved in the most basic way of getting involved with people and singing together and reminding yourself of who you are, what is really important, and those kinds of things. What is the best use of time? However you answer that question really says a lot about your commitment. I mean, that's what it's talking about, your commitment. I mean, the question just stands there and looks us in the face. Making the best use of time is the command. Time management. Is what I'm doing right now helping me achieve my goal? What's my goal? What's my goal? If it's to get to heaven, things are going to change in your time management. So what we have is life that fills up our life, and sometimes that little stuff on the outside there, that little margin, we don't have that. We've got to figure out a way to have that margin. And that means not letting anybody color that in, not even your kids, and I'm sorry, but not even your kids. You've got to leave margin. That's the Christian. If you're not a Christian, it doesn't matter. You can put whatever you want in there. Your life can expand out to that edge. It doesn't make any difference. But if you're involved with the people of God, if the church is important to you, if what the church does is important to you, if your Christianity is important to you, then you've got to keep that margin. And as many point out, there's a cure for overload. You keep that edge and margin. I've been there. I know this. I know I've tried to live at 120%. It doesn't work. You can't do it. You can't do it without burning out. And if you have no time for the church, then you're disobeying what God has told you to do. Let me approach this from a different angle. The Japanese have this saying. It's called Hari Hachibu. Hari Hachibu. It actually means eat until you're 80% full. It's something the Okinawans obey pretty close to. They keep that pretty close to the chest. They do this. My mother always said, as probably yours did, eat everything on your plate. And then I'd say, I'd go, and she'd say, there are people who are starving in Bangladesh. And I try to figure out the reasoning there exactly. Wouldn't it be great if by eating more food, we could feed all the starving people in the world? That'd be awesome. Just eat more and they get fed somehow. But as a kid, I know what she was saying. They don't have much. You do, so eat it all. So, we typically did. When I decided to lose a few pounds, I'd get on the scale. I'd weigh myself on the scale, and I'd go, ugh. And then I'd get off. I determined to do better, and I wouldn't do better. I wouldn't do anything. So I get on the scale the next time, and it's still the same. I had done nothing to change that. So I threw the scale in the trash, and then I went, and I didn't weigh myself anymore. I felt that was the best thing. But then I found out when I started thinking about this, which was this term was actually used in a completely different context. I said this is a good diet plan. The Okinawans have the highest percentage of people living to 100 than anybody. Eating still 80% full. Hari Hachibu. But it works as a time diet too. If we think about it, just limiting myself to the time that I fill up to 80% of the stuff I could do. And believe me, some of this makes me miserable. I like to be busy all the time. But if I'm so busy all the time and you have a need and I don't have any room to fill that need, either in my time or my money, if I don't have any financial margin or any time margin, then I'm not going to be available. And a lot of what we are as Christians is just being available. That's what people need. And so I commend to you this idea of Hari Hachibu, both for diet of food and diet of time. I think it makes a lot of sense. The point is that we need to keep that open space. And if we don't, then I don't see how the church can grow like it has. I don't see how it can. I think eventually we'll become like so many churches that the people will be here as long as they're here, and then it'll start getting smaller and smaller, and won't be very much evangelistic activity going on because we're all doing our own thing. It won't be a church that is alive and living to the full as God wants us to live, but it'll be one that's just kind of slowing down because we're all doing what we do in our personal life. Everything we do, I know, we think is important. My point today is just get involved. It's good for you and it's good for the church. And ask the question that we've asked before. If everyone was just like you, what kind of church would this be? Ask it to yourself. If every person was just like me, what kind of church would this church be? If everybody used their time like I do, if everybody gave like I do, if everybody got involved to the extent I'm involved, what kind of church would this church be? Question to think about. If you're not in the church, I wasn't talking to you. If you're not a member of the church, I wasn't. I mean, I think there's some good principles here you can put to use. You can certainly do the diet if you want to and benefit from that. But we're talking almost always when I'm standing up here, I'm talking to those who have made a commitment to Christ. You made that commitment in baptism. And you were added to the church on the day that you were immersed in water and came up out of the water. That's what we read in Acts chapter 2. The way that we clear our conscience is through that watery grave of baptism. It's not to get dirt off of us. It's to get the dirt in our mind out of us and the dirt in our life out of us. Not off our flesh, but out of our heart and out of our minds. and to start over, to start new, and you can do that. It is a commitment. That was my point this morning. A lot of people don't want to make that commitment. But if you do, if you see value in that, and you see value in getting to heaven one day, because that's the reward that we can look forward to, that's the promise that we have, then you need to make that decision. If you are subject to that, we ask you to come as we stand and sing.